everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. As always, I have Rick and Tony. We've got some interesting news from the week. We have a lot from on the cybersecurity front that we're going to talk about. So I'm excited to jump into this with you guys. How are you all doing today?
Fantastic, man. How are you?
Doing great. Looking forward to this chat. All righty, let's talk. And we shared in a hot take yesterday the arrest of Pavel Durov, the founder, CEO of Telegram. He was arrested in France. And I pulled up this Lex Fridman quote, you know, governments should not engage in censorship. And this is exactly what they're doing. Just, you know, if you want more detailed analysis on this, we did talk about it already. Check it out. But any further comments, gentlemen? Tony?
When governments resort to tyranny and attacks like this, it's because they are desperate and because they are losing. And I just don't see any way of them being victorious using this approach. Not now, not ever. So all this is going to do is make the mission to create decentralized alternatives to all these centralized platforms even more of a priority. And then once that happens, good luck stopping it.
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, similar to Tony, it's a sad reflection of the state that society's in now. I mean, you're starting to see the similar things happen everywhere, right? So the UK government now arresting people for tweeting wrong think. That's pretty intense. Arresting the Samurai devs, trying to put them away for 25 years for giving you the ability to transact privately. That's a problem. And a lot like Tony says, right? Like this is the behavior of authoritarians and elites who realize that they're losing control of the narrative, and that to me it's a sign that they're scared and they're a bit concerned that things are starting to loosen from their grip. So when governments get desperate, they take even more crazier actions than they ever have before. But you know, to try and, you know, sometimes what we talk about can be a bit scary, right? And it is a bit scary. The world's in a sort of precarious position right now. But at the same time, you know, what tends to happen is the more they tighten their grip around free speech and freedom, the more things start to slip between their fingers and through the cracks of that grip, right? So the harder they squeeze, the more the water comes out between their fingers. So, you know, it's always going to be an arms race. I mean, the EU's been trying to ban encryption now for 5 or 6 years, which is just absolutely bonkers, right? So this is just more of the same. And France just basically rug pulled Pavel, right? Because they offered him a passport in 2021 to give him, you know, some sort of escape from Russia. And now that he's no longer useful for them, they'll quite happily set a trap and try and rug pull him. So we're all just sitting here hoping that, you know, we find some sort of justice. But even if we don't, there's plenty of people out there building decentralized messaging platforms. And we have to be creative. We have to be willing to change and move and find ways to communicate with each other, because they're going to keep trying to make it harder and harder to do. But I do think we'll win in the end.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're very fortunate to live in an age of cryptography and of sort of these new applications of existing technologies that will allow for decentralized communication and I'll say censorship resistant, not censorship proof necessarily, forms of communication that at least make it very difficult, especially across jurisdictions. It's very hard. It's hard. Like, I can speak for the United States. I mean, the two sides can't agree on anything. Now imagine that playing out on a global stage, trying to get, you know, the BRICS nations and NATO to, you know, to agree that we're going to shut down Bitcoin or Nostr or any of these open source protocols. It's highly, highly unlikely, I think, at this point. So we're going to shift the focus here to cybersecurity. So Rick, I'm actually going to pass this one to you. So why you need to know about ransomware? This is something that, you know, has been prevalent for a long time. But I think it's just like an evergreen topic. The threats change and the means of extorting money and information from people, I think, evolve over time. Why don't you share just sort of an overview? And then Tony, I'd love to hear your thoughts on like the practical, what, you know, what to do.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like, you know, this is concerning, but not unexpected. And what I mean by that is I think most normal people haven't had huge concern to worry about ransomware just yet, right? And that's the reason, because these hackers that push the ransomware, ultimately, they think a bit like businessmen, right? They put the work in to try and hack someone and tie up their data, and what they're looking for is the biggest payday that they can get. So historically, they've targeted all this malware at, big companies because they can extort them, and those big companies have a lot of money, and those systems are crucial for them running their business. So they were always the target. But for me personally, this move now, the attention of the hackers is moving away from just big businesses and moving towards targeting just individuals as well. And that should be a trend that really concerns Bitcoiners. And it's something that's been on my mind a long time now since I got hacked, right? Because part of the reason me and my dad's security wasn't up to scratch is because, to be honest, we just didn't really consider ourselves to be big targets. And we'd never had to secure something so critical and so important before. And perhaps then we just didn't have the right mindset when we approached securing our money, right? And that's what led us to having such a terrible experience in the end and getting hacked. And what I realized after going through that process is think about it. It's just logic, right? If all of a sudden, if I'm a hacker and I want to push malware out and I'm trying to make a quick buck, then previously it made sense to go after the big fish and the big companies to get that money. But now, as people are increasingly holding their wealth personally, right, and this wealth is growing and growing and growing, all of a sudden the attention of the hackers is changing because they're just acting like businessmen where they're going, hang on, where do I get the biggest bang for my buck with the lowest amount of effort? Now, if I'm a hacker, I could say, well, I'll go and try and hack Sony or some, big multinational corporation. But they also know that that's maybe not the easiest target because these big companies, they'll spend, thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions a year on their cybersecurity. Whereas John down the road with $5 million worth of Bitcoin probably hasn't spent very much money on his cybersecurity and doesn't have the skill sets to do it. So straight away, the incentives of the game have changed. And the hackers, because the incentives has changed, their behavior has changed. So now there's going to be so much more of this in the future, like those going after individuals. So for me, it reminds me of two things. Like number one, whenever you leave your data with someone else, eventually it's going to escape somewhere. So really think about whether you need to give that data or whether you can find creative ways to do what you want online without giving up your information. And number two, you need to start thinking a bit more like a big business. If you're protecting most of your wealth in Bitcoin, then, I've said it before, but you're now head of security. So you're going to have to find ways to start protecting yourself and taking that a lot more seriously. So I think it's a really important message to share to people.
Certainly. Tony, what are some of the precautionary steps that people can take to evade ransomware?
Yeah, ransomware has been a fact of life for many years now. It's nothing new, but as I predicted, a couple of years ago, that this is going to continue to increase in sophistication and scale as more tools make it easier for hackers to trick people, because essentially that's how you get the ransomware onto someone's computer in the first place. In a big way, it's social engineering. You concoct a website that looks legit, and some unexpected user comes in, click, downloads or clicks on a link, boom, it's done. An exploit is taken advantage of, and the back door is installed onto the computer. And in some cases, the dangerous ones don't activate right away. They remain dormant, for a little while. And only after a certain period of time, then they switch on and hijack the entire computer. So you have to be very careful about, these kinds of attacks, because it's not just one kind. The people behind these things are very creative, and it's an extremely lucrative market. And their key to all this is the pressure, the time pressure. They know your data is locked, and they tell you have 24 hours. So they don't give you much time to react before nuking your information, or at least letting you believe that it's going to go. And so they play on your emotions, especially if it's your only computer and you've got other, whether it's your finances, your kids' pictures, whatever it is that's valuable on it, you're going to want it back. And so a regular individual, unfortunately, will comply to a lot of it, which makes it very profitable. But the dangerous part about this is that some of these things, when you call something, they give you a number to call for help. And when you provide that information, depending on what it is that you give them, that information can be used to siphon bigger amounts of money, like, for example, your bank accounts or your crypto on an exchange, if you've left it there. That's really the real money is in that type of wizardry, you know, tricking folks into providing certain key elements of data that will be used in real time to wipe you clean. And so how do you protect yourself against this? Well, for one, there's a lot of education that's required. Most folks to this day, 2024, are not fully comfortable behind a computer or even aware of all the elements at play when they sit behind that screen and start typing on the keyboard. There's a lot of education that still needs to be put out there, but you need people to be open to, you know, learning this, or at least paying a bit more attention to it. Your computers need to remain up to date. You do not install things from websites you don't know. You certainly don't let strangers give you hardware to plug into your machine if you don't know who they are and where they've purchased that piece of equipment from. See, because ransomware doesn't necessarily just come by clicking on a phishing link on an email. You know, there are flash drives, USB flash drives that somebody can give you under the pretext, oh, here, cool, I bought this for you. Or you find it lying down on the street somewhere. You think, oh, look, a free gadget. And you go and you plug it in and boom, now you've just, you know, punched a hole inside your computer that gives a remote hacker full access to everything you're doing on that machine. So all of these things, you know, like most people don't even conceptualize that they're even possible, but they are, you know, like there are no coincidences in cybercrime. Everything can be planned, but made to look like it was just, oops, you know, like some random thing. So people have to be careful. I mean, it really comes down to vigilance, keeping your machines up to date, installing, you know, the latest anti-malware software on your computers, ideally locking down the traffic from, you know, a router level, you know, using multi-level VPNs, you know, modern firewalls. And today we have, you know, our disposable AI real-time threat detection. You know, all of these things running full-time on a machine can significantly improve the probability that you never see any of these problems. But again, you know, it comes down to pushing out the education and for people to be receptive. Because if you think you're not that important, or you're not doing anything that, you know, is, you know, that warrants so much attention, you'll be surprised, you know, as the days go by, how creative these things get, because it's a volume game. You know, like they're not really focusing on you. They don't care about you specifically. But when they cast a wide net out there, every amount adds up to the big jackpot, right? And especially specific to Bitcoin, as this asset continues to rise, hackers out there are not stupid. They know there's a big number of folks that are now holding Bitcoin, and they're doing all sorts of things on their computer, not necessarily the right way. So they will cast a net, and with AI at their disposal, that net will come in a shape or form that you may seem very normal to you, and then boom, before you know it, you have a problem. So be very careful out there. If you have questions, ask experts in the field. You know, it's really up to everyone to be responsible, you know, in this department. Because if you get hacked, it's not a happy ending, and I don't wish anyone to go through this. So, at the Bitcoin way, I mean, we're like a bit of the beekeepers here. You know, we sort of like protect the hive with everyone that we consult with. You know, by consistently giving out, you know, certain tips and guidances and best practices, so that the probability of anyone running into an issue remains as close to zero as possible.
Hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter, and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty, whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon.
All righty, let's stay on a similar subject here. So also from Malwarebytes, My child had her data stolen. Here's how to protect your kids from identity theft. I can't, do either of you remember just recently there was an attack on like maybe one of the agencies here in the US, like everyone's social security was hacked. I don't even remember the details of it now. It's been a couple of weeks and news goes by fast, I suppose. Tony, how do you think about mitigating against identity theft, and then any practical tips and tricks, or maybe even just sharing like how does this often happen?
Well, this is the problem with centralized databases of information. You know, the whole concept of KYC, this is exactly what causes this. Unfortunately, the way the world is structured, you can't get far with like the important institutions without giving up your information. Like, for example, your insurance, your medical insurance, your banking, all of them are going to request real data from you, you know, identification cards, passports, whatever it is. So you have no choice really but to provide that information. The dangers is you don't know if they are taking the proper precautions to protect what they receive from you. And as it's been very clearly shown, most of them don't. Why? Because it costs a lot of money to continuously upkeep, you know, the security of data. You know, you need bigger drives, better encryption, you know, bigger servers, faster connections, all of that stuff regularly. And so it's a big expense that these guys don't necessarily want to spend money on, you know, versus keeping it for their bonuses or their vacations or, you know, whatever other nonsense they spend their money on. And then ultimately, it's the consumer that gets screwed with this, like in the case that you read about in this article. This 9-year-old girl had her identity stolen. She doesn't even have an email. She's barely used the computer. So how does this happen to a 9-year-old? It's because someone did not do their job properly and, you know, was careless about the protection of all the information that they had collected from her in the first place. How do you get around this? I mean, I don't know. We have to start moving to a world of decentralized data keeping. I mean, this whole concept of trusting institutions with information for our protection, that's a complete delusion. I mean, I think more and more people will become aware of this as they get hit specifically, but I think it's a long way from that becoming mainstream, sadly, because, you know, the common mindset is, well, if it hasn't happened to me, you know, I'm not going to really worry about it too much. And, you know, this is what delays proper solutions.
Yeah. Rick?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, this one hits me in the gut a little bit because, again, it's kind of personal. You know, a big part of the reason why me and my dad were targeted by hackers and we got hacked is because our KYC information was at the exchange Mt. Gox. And when that exchange got hacked, they had all our KYC information. So they had my name, my dad's name, they had my personal address, my dad's personal address. And they also had all the Bitcoin purchases we'd ever made. They knew where we'd sent them. They knew the addresses we were using. And that's pretty terrifying, man. I mean, you know, this information is now floating around out there saying, look, these guys at one point had over $1 million worth of Bitcoin, and this is their home address. I mean, if that sort of stuff doesn't give you the heebie-jeebies, right, and a cold bead of sweat running down the back of your neck, then it should do. And I think what we're learning, and Tony points out so well, is that like when you put your information in these centralized databases, I think a good rule of thumb is just to assume that on a long enough timeline, information wants to escape and people want to liberate it. So that information is probably going to end up out there somewhere. So it's a really good reminder that, you know, like everyone these days puts up these KYC walls to do almost anything online. And they're either doing it because, you know, it's some government agency and you're dealing with finance, but even quite simple, small things like recently, I went 10 pin bowling the other day and I wanted to book that online, right? All I want to do is go 10 pin bowling. They're like, what's your address? What's your email? What's your name? What's your mother's maiden name? I mean, it wasn't quite that ridiculous. I'm sitting there thinking, God, I just want to go bowling. This is ridiculous. So I ended up just going, right, I'm not going through this process because you guys are taking the mickey. And obviously, all they want to do is market to me, which is fine. But so I said, no, screw this. And I called them and made a booking over the phone. Now that was painful, right? Because they were like, what are you doing calling us? Go on the website. I said, no, like I just can I come bowling at 4 p.m. today, please? If you say there's a lane, I will be there. Like, don't worry about it. So anyway, we got through it. But the point is everybody's after your data, and you could be a lot more careful and a lot more mindful about what you're putting out there. And if it's not absolutely essential for the service, then use throwaway email addresses. I don't know, maybe have like a burner phone, but just start thinking about little things you can do to get the outcome you want without giving up your data, because it has a value, right? And you need to understand that. The fact that this 9-year-old girl ended up getting targeted by this again is a good example of, to a certain extent, well, she didn't click any phishing links. She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't download any malware, but still she became a victim of this nonsense because these centralized companies, like Tony says, they're going to cut corners. They're a business. The thing they care about is their P&L, right? Like, how do we maximize profit? And where are they going to cut corners? Well, they're unlikely to cut corners on their marketing because that drives revenue. They're probably going to invest in their services because if they give bad service, then you might leave to a competitor. But one thing that you don't know whether they're doing a good job on or not is their cybersecurity. So, a businessman's probably going to look at that and take the view, well, I can cut corners there and nobody will notice until obviously something big blows up in their face. So assume that people are going to lose your data and proceed in that fashion. And hopefully, look, on a long enough timeline, hopefully, we can reach a world where KYC is finally put to bed, because the evidence now is overwhelming that KYC does far, far more harm to innocent people than it does help stop any of the things that the government would like to convince you it helps prevent, like fraud and crime. It's heavily weighted on the victims here of KYC and not the criminals. It's more so, if anything, it helps the criminals, right? Criminals are probably really pro KYC because they're like, yeah, good, put all that data in a honeypot that I can go after, right? They're not like, oh no, the government's doing KYC, what will we do? They're all for it. So KYC is the problem. And yeah, I don't know, maybe we can vote with our feet. If you have two businesses offering the same service and one will allow you to do use that service non-KYC versus one that forces you, then choose the one that's non-KYC. And let's bring this back around to Bitcoin a little bit, right? Like, bear in mind, if you're trying to stash all of your wealth in Bitcoin and take control of your own money, that's a serious thing that you don't want to lose access to. I can speak from personal experience there. So how do you get your hands on non-KYC Bitcoin? Or at least, if your Bitcoin currently is KYC'd, well, how can you now start building a non-KYC stack and, spread your risk a little bit? And just let's just get smarter about this, because KYC, in my opinion, stands for kill your customer. Because people could have showed up at my house with that information and beat the living daylights out of us trying to get hold of that Bitcoin. So like, this is a serious threat, and if you just roll over and ignore it, thinking it'll never happen to me, I can tell you that's what I used to think, and it happened to me. So take this stuff seriously. Listen to people like Tony. Like, he's giving you advice that is not just hyperbolic and trying to scare you into worrying too much. He's giving you advice that's real. And you need to follow it, because once it's too late, it's too late. And trust me, you don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, definitely. And one last practical piece of advice. Not that this is a get out of jail free card, but at least in the US, we have three main credit bureaus that if you have a social security number here, they have your data, all of it, and it's not consensual. But you can create an account, you can freeze it so that way people can't be taking out loans or credit cards or that sort of thing in your name without your consent. So that's one thing just to keep in mind, practically speaking. All righty, we've got one last. This is why we're Bitcoiners, gentlemen. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell spoke in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I guess it was last week, and he effectively confirmed a September rate cut. So money printer go burr. And we are, by the way, not down to our 2% inflation target. And how much he cuts is going to be contingent probably on what does the economy look like, because their dual mandate is price stability and effectively full employment. And they never do either very well, but they just kind of, it's like ping pong. They're just batting it back and forth, trying to keep it manageable for the average person. Tony, what does this mean for Bitcoin if they start cutting rates here with inflation? And what does it mean for inflation if they start cutting rates while we're still, you know, significantly above our 2% target?
Well, I mean, there's not much to say about this, is that other than you're never going to see that 2% ever again, in my opinion. That number is a long distant memory that's never going to come back. They're pinned against the corner. You know, everything is falling apart, and the only way to keep this scam going is to print and print exponentially more than they've ever done in the past. So what's that going to do? Well, it's going to continue stealing from everyone. They're going to continue ripping you off. Your purchasing power is going to continue going down, except at a much faster rate now. Your $100 bill will be worth maybe 60, maybe even less in terms of buying power. So factor that in. What's it going to do for Bitcoin? It's going to do the most useless thing for Bitcoin, and that most likely pump that number, go up like crazy. That's what I think it's going to do. And a lot of people are going to get all excited about that, thinking, you know, they're millionaires or billionaires, where in fact, you know, what they're missing is that Bitcoin is not going up in value in fiat terms. It's like the fiat itself is heading to zero at a much faster pace. And that should be like ringing all sorts of alarm bells to anyone that is still, one, working for fiat, but worse, two, still saving all of their money in a bank, thinking that that's the way to go, or, you know, investing in bonds or any of that other rubbish that's out there. Again, this is not financial advice, obviously, but this is just common sense based on, you know, the state of the world right now. You want to be exiting the system into assets that cannot be manipulated or controlled by anyone. And as far as I'm concerned, there's only one, and that is Bitcoin. And the only way to take advantage of it is to buy it and hold it in 101% full self-custody. There is no other way. There's no company. There's no exchange. There's no third party that's going to make it safer or easier for you, no matter what they tell you. You need to do it yourself. It's not hard. It's just a few steps that you need to learn. That's it. So you either continue to believe the government BS and watch your life wither away until you reach a point where you are literally flat broke and not knowing in which direction to go, or you do the work, you study Bitcoin, you listen to those who have been through hell before you so that you avoid going through that same process yourself. Nothing more to say. Things will continually get worse financially. They will continue to print. There is no other way. If they stop printing today, 10 minutes later, the whole world blows up. So that is not an option for them to do.
Yeah, Bitcoin is, it's technology and it's money. But what it really does is it preserves the time and energy that we contribute to society. And I think too many people use the Bitcoin price as like a daily dopamine hit, or an hourly, or a every 10 minute dopamine hit, right? And, you know, I track price only to the extent that it gives me some indication of the buying power of my savings. But it's not something that matters at all in the short term, because I view Bitcoin as long-term savings. It's something that I'm using to protect and preserve wealth, not something that I'm going to go buy a Lambo tomorrow. So that's an important thing, I think, for people who are constantly tracking the price. And, you know, it's fun to make predictions, and it's fun to, you know, keep an eye on, is my wealth increasing? Great. But don't get absorbed by that and miss the true meaning of what Bitcoin is for you and for your family. Rick, any comments on Fed Powell, our dear savior?
Oh, yeah. How long have you got, man? Like this guy. Wow. Holy cow. Right. So, I mean, first of all, you know, if all the Americans realized what Jerome Powell is actually up to, they'd recognize that, like, this is treason. It's actually treasonous. Like, he is selling out the American public to enrich himself and his friends and governments and politicians at the expense of at expense of all US citizens, and in fact, if you go further, citizens of the entire world. Right? And the if there was one thing I could get across to everybody in the world today, it would be that, like, look at the difference. Look at the stark difference between Bitcoin and fiat money in the Federal Reserve. So with Bitcoin, you have an entirely predictable inflation rate that we can predict from here until the end of time, because it is set in a protocol and it runs mathematically. So, you know, each one of us could sit down now and go and figure out exactly how many Bitcoin will be in circulation at any point in time between now and any point in time in the future, right? Because it's run by mathematics and logic and common sense. And we all agree on it and nobody controls it. Now, look at the Federal Reserve, where you have, what, seven or eight people in suits, and they're basically like, it's like Neanderthals. It's like, it's ridiculous. They're like shaman, right? Kind of doing a rain dance in the middle of this office, trying to make it rain and trying to make the economy work. I mean, if that doesn't strike you as completely batshit insane, I don't know how to help you. Right? Nine people think that they can steward and direct an economy to where they want it to go, when an economy is made up of every single transaction conducted by everyone on the planet. I mean, this is the definition of ridiculous now. And I think in 50, 100 years time, people will look back at it and think it is just as ridiculous as we do now when we look back at things like doctors using leeches on people. It's like rudimentary. It's like praying to a sun god. It just doesn't make any logical sense anymore. It's totally cuckoo, right? It's a religion. It's not anything sensible. It's not based on logic. And the thing is, you know what? It's even worse than that. You know, calling these people shaman is letting them off the hook, because it just suggests that they're too stupid to realize that they can't centrally manage an economy. But believe me, they are not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. They print money for themselves and their friends, and they do it at your expense because it debases any savings that you might try and accrue. And if you try and escape this ridiculous system and try and build wealth, then the only way for you to do it is to go and gamble in the stock market, or gamble by investing in property and driving property prices up, which means, by the way, that your kids will never own a home. And they think, oh, well, you'll all own nothing and be happy. I mean, this is a system of slavery. It's a system of control. And let's get to the other point, right? Like, all the numbers that they talk about are just complete and utter lies and bullshit, right? We talk about, will they ever get back to 2%? I'm like, they never were at 2%. Never. Like, you know, because when they calculate inflation, they leave out important things like food costs, energy costs, housing costs, you know, all those things that you actually need to survive, right? They pick and choose what goes in these baskets. And life has been getting more expensive since 1971. We came off the gold standard. Inflation went out of control. I mean, go to the website, WTF happened in 1971, and go and look at those charts, and you'll be shocked that this money creation system is wrecking everything. So as far as I'm concerned, if Jerome Powell was on my ship, he'd be taking a long walk off the short plank, right? And we need to, these people need to get in the sea, right? Because they're stealing from us, they're ruining society. And I can't think of a better example or a better piece of marketing that you could come up with for why Bitcoin is the solution. And the only gap between moving out of this world and this world is education and understanding. Like, when you understand how inflation works, and then you understand how inflation works in the Bitcoin world, the stark difference becomes once you see it, you can't unsee it. So, you know, look, life's going to keep getting more expensive. And I'll finish off by sort of reiterating Tony's extremely important point, which is they will print more, because the US government and all governments have now reached a point where their insolvency is out of control. So they have two options. Option one, default on their debt completely, right? But they are never going to do that. Or they're going to print and print and print, so inflation gets worse and worse and worse. And throughout history, whether it was the Roman Empire, or whether it was the Yippies, you know, with the Yap stones, or whether it was Weimar Germany, history shows us that they always choose option two, always choose option two, which is try and print more money to cover off all this ridiculous debt they've built up. And it always ends the same way, with piles of money, paper money in the street, being used to make necklaces or just thrown straight in the fire to warm yourself up. And the only way to avoid this great reckoning, because it's coming like rapidly, the only way is to move to a sound money that these lunatics don't control, that has predictable inflation, that can't be confiscated. Like, that is the lifeboat. That's the way to escape. It's not precious metals anymore. It's Bitcoin. So, man, I wish I could transmit this message to everybody in the world, because the sooner the Fed fails, the better. And as for Bitcoin ETFs, they're a joke as well. They're still part of the same system. ETF always did and still does stand for end the Fed. And that's what we're here to do.
Man, I love you guys. One point I'll reiterate, Rick, is that you made is education. I mean, that's really the hurdle. That's why we're here. That's why we're talking, is trying to bring some of this news and attention on these important topics to people. So for anyone listening, I appreciate you tuning in. Go to the bitcoinway.com/podcast. You can check out, or you can schedule time with our team, check out some of our services. We help with Bitcoin self-custody done the right way, no compromises, online privacy and security. So much of what Tony was hitting on, I mean, that is just, it's a non-negotiable in the world today. Plan B residency to citizenship programs, and most recently, de-Googled phones. So get your mobile life as private as your computer, your otherwise online life. And we'd love to share more about how we help. Again, the bitcoinway.com/podcast. Gentlemen, as always, an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and we'll be back again soon. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, Michael.